Welcome to another Evidence Podcast. Our goal is to provide valuable information from experts on how you can protect yourself. Today's topic is winning a child custody case. It's a pleasure to be speaking today with Dr. Roy Lubid, forensic child psychiatrist who has done over 100 child custody cases. He also has a PhD in social science field. He consults to the Bar Association of the City of New York's Children and Law Committee, has published and lectured on how to do proper custody evaluations, and has been called on to critique the evaluations of other experts around the country. Dr. Lubid also has special expertise concerning emotional trauma in children. Dr. Lubid, thank you for taking the time to join us today.
I'm happy to be here. With close to half of children suffering the divorce of their parents, and 10% of these being high-conflict cases, an enormous number of children affected by the way that our judicial system handles child custody cases.
What can one expect to face in a custody battle? What are the issues?
There are two basic issues at stake in custody battles: decision-making and visitation. Decision-making concerns all the issues parents normally make together for their children, including where they will go to school, where they will go to summer camp, what after-school and weekend activities they will be involved in, who will be the child's doctor, and what religion the child will be raised in. In some states, such as California, the court almost always grants joint custody. Disagreements on issues are handled either by going to court or by a special master who is appointed for terms of a year at a time and who has the power to make decisions when the parents do not disagree on things. In stark contrast, joint custody is almost never awarded in New York if the parties have gone to court to contest custody. Visitation concerns how much time the child spends with each parent. The traditional pattern has been to alternate weekends and for the non-custodial visitation parent to get one or two dinners during the week or one overnight during the week. Vacation is generally divided equally. In recent years, dividing the time equally has become increasingly common. This can be done by altering weeks or by the child being with one parent on Monday and Tuesday nights, the other parent on Wednesday and Thursday nights, and then alternating weekends. A very important issue that is often overlooked is the right of first refusal. Obtaining a right of first refusal means that if the parent who is supposed to be taking care of the child at a certain time is unable to do so, the other parent has the right to be with the children. This has a profound impact on the meaning of each parent's assigned time. When there is a right of first refusal, each parent has the first right to be with the children during their own assigned time. When there's no right of first refusal, then each parent's assigned time becomes a period when the parent is able to keep the other parent away from the children. This is very important. From a parent's perspective, it's infuriating to be prevented from seeing your child and to have them cared for by a babysitter. From the children's point of view, to have the custodial parent call a babysitter and block you from seeing your other parent conveys the custodial parent's contempt for your other parent, and this is very destructive to a child.
I would imagine it to be a very hard thing for the child to be refused contact with one of their parents.
It is.
Well, how does this system work?
The judge will make the final determination of what is in the child's best interests. A law guardian is generally appointed to represent the child's position. Depending upon the state you are in and depending upon the predisposition of the law guardian, he or she may serve primarily as the voice of the child in court, or serve as an evaluator who urges the court to give custody to one parent or the other. The court often orders the parents to have a forensic evaluation, an evaluation done by a child psychiatrist or psychologist. The opinions of the forensic evaluator and the law guardian generally have considerable impact on the court. Unfortunately, their opinions are often based more on personal preferences, pet theories, and who is more likable than on scientific fact. It's very important to learn how to make a good impression and how to present information. Being the better parent is not sufficient to win custody. You need to be able to convince the court that you are the better parent.
Sounds like being treated fairly is not always the case in child custody. What do courts look at when making these decisions?
In attempting to assess what is in the child's best interests, courts look at a number of issues, including which parent was the primary parent when the custody battle began, which parent is available to personally take care of the child, which parent will best support the child's relationship with the other parent, parent is warmer and more nurturing, which parent best understands this child's particular needs, which parent is best able to foster the child's curiosity, socialization, and moral development, which parent has a better parenting style for this child's particular temperament, who has better judgment about medical, educational, and recreational issues, which parent is better able to place the child's needs first. Is one of the parents so preoccupied with their own needs or anger that they're not able to put the child's needs first? Does either parent have emotional problems that will interfere with parenting? Does either have problems with drugs or alcohol? Who is the better role model? Who provides the better overall environment? And what are the child's preferences and the reasons for the preference?
That is a lot to take into consideration. And I'll bet it can be difficult for a parent to demonstrate they are the stronger parent in each area. How do you convince the court you are the stronger parent?
The primary way to convince the court is to actually be the stronger parent. You need to talk about all the good things you've done with your children, and you need to be very knowledgeable about them and their activities. You should become as knowledgeable as you can about child development and parenting skills, and try to be an authoritative rather than an authoritarian or permissive parent. You should work on being patient and responsive. You should be aware that children with different temperaments need different parenting styles. Now, there is no one style that is good for children.
What is the difference between an authoritative and an authoritarian parent?
An authoritarian parent will say, go to sleep or get dressed because I tell you to. And an authoritative parent says, go to sleep because you need rest to function tomorrow, and get dressed because we're going out in a few minutes. The difference is whether you explain to the child why they need to do a certain thing, and in doing so, you're sending the message to the child that you need to do this because it's the right thing for you, or it's the fair and appropriate thing to do in the world because that's what our culture demands. An authoritarian parent basically says, I'm in charge, you do what I tell you. And children who have those parents tend to develop a lot of anger and a lot of oppositional behavior.
In court, what about criticizing the other parent? How's that handled?
This is a tricky issue. Some argue that the person who attacks first gains a great advantage by creating a negative impression of the other parent and putting them on the defensive. Going on the offensive in this way, however, runs the risk of the evaluator seeing you as having a negative view of the other parent, and such a negative view that you will not properly support the child's relationship with the other parent, and therefore the child should be with the other parent, lest you damage their relationship. Specific forensic evaluators, judges, and law guardians react very differently to specific information. Some will tend to believe allegations made against a parent and will seek to protect the child from that parent, even if the allegations are unproven or doubtful. Other judges, law guardians, and forensic evaluators tend to believe that allegations of child mistreatment made during custody battles are fabrications, that the child needs to be protected from the parent making the allegations, rather than protected from the parent who is accused of being inappropriate with the child.
It seems that preparing for a custody case can oftentimes be dependent on who the particular judge, law guardian, and evaluators are.
Unfortunately, outcomes are very much dependent upon the particular people assigned to the case, rather than upon objective criteria.
What areas should be considered in preparation for a child custody evaluation?
You should be the best parent you can be, which means being an active parent. Children who both do best when both parents are actively involved with their care and development. You should be going to medical and dental visits. You should be involved in buying clothing, making decisions on schools and camps. You should be reading to your children before bedtime and playing with them each day and taking them places on weekends. You should know who their friends are and what they like to do. Parents who relinquish many areas of parenting to the spouse are not likely to get custody. It's not enough to be doing these things. You also need to be able to prove that you do these things. You need to avoid bad-mouthing your spouse to the children at all costs. Not only will this lose you custody, but it's bad parenting. But what children see their parents hating each other, it's extremely stressful for children. It can also be helpful to consult with a child psychiatrist or psychologist about any behavioral issues or emotional issues your child has, and about how to help them through the divorce process. This shows concern for the child's welfare and openness to professional advice.
How do you prove that you participate in your children's life?
Actually doing them is the first step. Hopefully, the forensic evaluator will ask the children who does different things with them. In my experience, however, forensic evaluators and law guardians generally don't ask this simple question. You need to be involved in activities in which other people see you doing these things, people who might be able to testify. You need to go to medical and dental visits. You need to go to sporting events. You need to go to PTA meetings and parent-teacher conferences. You should arrange for play dates and be the parent to take your child on play dates. You should go on outings with your child and take pictures of the things you do. You should know the names of their friends, their medical history, their favorite books, and their strengths and weaknesses in school.
I can see how it would be very important to a person's case that they do take part in these activities to show they are a strong parent for their children. What are some ways for a person to collect this information?
It's important to keep a log. Courts tend to give much greater weight to records that are kept contemporaneously. It's much better to write down the things you do with the child and the appointments you go on with them than to simply say that you went to half of doctor visits or you bought much of their clothing. Being able to show that you kept records on what days you went shopping, what you purchased, creates a stronger impression. The problem is that parents normally do not do this, and you risk being seen as a bit strange or at least compulsive if you write down all sorts of things people do not normally write down. But perhaps you could, you know, buy things on your credit card, and on a credit card that you yourself have, so that it's clear that you were the one who did the clothing buying, or you were the one who took them to dinner or to the movies.
At Evidence, we are firm believers in keeping a record of events, especially as they happen, so that they're real. In a he said, she said situation, how does one determine who is telling the truth?
Judges and law guardians tend to rely heavily on their observation of the demeanor of the parties. This is a very serious problem, since research is showing that although people think that they can assess who is telling the truth by observing their demeanor, in reality they can't. In addition, there's a very powerful tendency to interpret or vet information so that it fits pre-existing beliefs. In other words, judges, law guardians, and even forensic evaluators will tend to believe whichever parent made a better first impression. What one should do to assess who is telling the truth is to do an extensive search for objective evidence and to look for contradictions in the person's statements. For example, in one situation, a father claimed he had been the overwhelmingly primary parent since mother was out of the country for much of the year. I asked to see the daycare records, and they showed that either mother was bringing the child to daycare, picking her up, or the child was out of the country with the mother. This totally contradicted the father's claim that he was doing 95% of the caretaking that year, and it supported his mother's claim that she was doing a bit more than half. In another case, a father claimed that he was very active in interacting with the child's school and teachers. So I called up the school, and the child's teachers said that they had never seen him. The fact that a parent lied about some things does not mean that they're lying about other things. Nevertheless, finding that a parent has clearly lied to you on some issues is a far more accurate way of assessing who is honest and who is credible on issues in general than observing their demeanor.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing all of that information. That's been very useful information for the Evidence members and anyone listening to this podcast. And this concludes this particular podcast, and I'd like you to stay tuned for our next podcast with Dr. Lubit about child custody evaluations, as he gives you the information you need to know. Thank you, Dr. Lubit. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you for having me.
How can our listeners get in contact with you?
My email address is my name, roylubit@rcn.com, and my office number is 917-846-4000. 7829. People can also use Google to find me on the web and find my CV and my contact information.
Well, again, thank you very much. And if any of you out there would like to learn more from Dr. Lubit, there is his contact information. Remember what Dr. Lubit said. If you are involved in a child custody case, the Evidence Digital Diary gives you a great way to collect your evidence. With the Evidence Digital Diary, you now have court presentable facts, chronological documentation, have to be organized, and credibility of evidence. That's key. Don't wait. Sign up for the Evidence Digital Diary today at www.evidence.com. This is Andy Williams with Evidence Corporation, reminding you that facts count. Don't forget. Collect everything and start protecting yourself today.